Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, good evening and welcome again to the December edition of the Training Office. My name is Al Schlick, and I'll be your host for, let's say the next hour or so. Hopefully, during this hour, we'll be answering Dr. King's most pertinent question, what are you, in fact, doing for others? And here in the Training Office, that's exactly what we're trying to do for others. Folks, welcome back. I just want to take a few moments before I forget, because I know I'll get scatterbrained. I actually script the show, and I don't mean script like exactly what I'm going to say, but I have notes, and I kind of have an idea where I want to go, but sometimes I get off track, and if I forget, I want to make sure that each one of you out there and from our family here at the Illinois Society, the International Society of Fire Service Instructors, have a safe holiday, have a good holiday, and folks, one of the things I just want to get across right off the bat, when I was a kid, we always used to say, well, at least you have your health. I used to hear that. It didn't make any sense to me because, of course, I was a kid. What do I know? When you're a kid, nothing's going to go wrong. Nothing's happened. Folks, I turned 45 years old yesterday. Happy birthday to me. And I never honestly thought that I would ever be 45. It's just one of those things you never do. And as I get older, and I don't want to sound like suddenly I'm the wisest person around, but, boy, you know that whole health thing? It really becomes important. And fortunately for me, I'm healthy. I'm happy. I've got really the world at my fingertips as far as I can tell because I'm involved in the greatest job in the entire universe, and that's being a firefighter and a fire instructor, and folks, I'm very happy to share that with you. So this holiday season, let's make sure that we remind ourselves, remind the people we love, remind the folks we work with how much they are important to us, how much we care about them, and how much we want them to be successful and to survive. Folks, with that, You caught me actually on vacation. Towards the end of the year, I forget. So that's actually I wanted to bring up that personal health and safety thing. We talk about health and safety of our firefighters. We have to remember to do the same for us. I was shocked at the end of this year when our administrative assistant came up and told me, hey, dummy, you got some days to take off. I had just forgotten to take a bunch of days off. You get involved in things, you forget about it. I'm very fortunate. I understand that I am a career firefighter and that I have that. I know so many of you listening to the sound of my voice out there are unpaid professionals. And professional, again, folks, remember, has nothing to do with the paycheck. It has to do with the job you perform and the work that you do. And so many of you out there, you work regular jobs, and then you come to the firehouse at night, evenings, weekends. Unbelievable what you do and for your communities. I can't say enough about it. But I'm fortunate enough, a paid career firefighter, and I forgot to take my days off. So here I am jamming a bunch of days in at the end of the year. And so you caught me on holiday. I actually forgot to call. If you notice the update that came out today from Fire Engineering, it didn't have anything about what we were going to talk about. So, folks, I just let you know tonight we're really going to talk all about 2013 and in planning for 2013 and trying to look forward and seeing what we can do as training officers to get our folks prepared and ready to respond in 2013, much like we've been doing so far this year. So that's really what we're going to talk about. I don't have any guests scheduled. I did not talk to Chief Klein, so I don't know if he's calling in or not. That's my fault if he didn't. But, folks, if he does, that's great. We'll bring him on. If not, I want to start off with some ISFSI board member updates, kind of a little part of the show normally where Chief Klein might come on or one of the other directors. And what I've got for you is I just wanted to pass this along, and geez, I'm a bit of a downer this evening. I apologize for that, but I wanted to just pass this on. Former ISFSI president passes away, and I have been just having the worst time this afternoon as I prepared for the show. What we had is the passing of a former president, Jack, and it's either Pelletier or Pelletier. And I'm going to call it Chief Jack so I don't mess this up and show any disrespect. But Chief Jack Pat from Marlboro, Massachusetts, passed away. And I'm just going to read right from the news release from ISFSI when they sent this out. And again, I'm just going to go with Chief Jack because I don't want to mess up his last name. Marlboro, Massachusetts, passed away. One of the greatest fire instructors of all time, passed away on Sunday, December the 9th, 2012. Here's this. A veteran of nearly 60 years in the fire service. 60 years. Man was in the fire service 15 years before I was born. What an incredible legacy. Jack was retired as the assistant chief of the Marlboro Fire Department. At the time of his passing, he was serving as the safety officer for the Berlin Fire Department. As a matter of fact, he was still responding to incidents as recently as a couple of weeks prior to his passing. An unbelievable legacy, and I'll stumble over my words and say that again, I'm sure. Jack was a life member and past president of the International Society of Fire Service Instructors. One of his greatest achievements was serving as quartermaster of the practical firefighting drills at FDIC when it was located in Cincinnati. I actually attended FDIC for a couple of years when it was in Cincinnati. It's a fine town, if I remember. And if I forget to say it, it's 130 days to FDIC, but I'll say that again. But back to Chief Jack. Unless you passed the Chief Jack test for skills or abilities, you never made it to the drill floor at the convention. Jack was an active member of the teaching staff of the Massachusetts Firefighting Academy for many decades. Many are the folks who claim to have great pride that Jack taught them all they needed to know to succeed in the fire service. His knowledge of pump operations was without peer. Chief Jack was an ardent supporter of the Fire Act grant program, serving as a volunteer on the grant review committee since its inception. His knowledge of the grant system was outstanding, and as many were the folks who turned to Jack in search of the answers to their grant-related questions. Chief Jack is survived by his wife, Sue, his daughters, Anne Marie and Melissa Irish, his son, Lieutenants Jim of South Borough Fire Department, and his grandchildren, Jason Irish, Sarah, Stephen, Sean, and Seth. They're going to have a viewing for him here this Friday on the 14th at 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock at the Slattery Funeral Home in Marlboro, Massachusetts. The funeral will be held Saturday morning at the Immaculate Conception Church in Marlboro. Folks, I was going to look this up before the show started. I don't know if you ever remember Dr. Carter's book. He wrote a book about the Fire Act grant, and he traveled all across the country. And Chief Jack was his wingman when they did that. I read that book. It was a great read. And I'm going to have to add it to our list one of these days, and folks, we've got to take a look at. But just an incredible journey, and Chief Jack's continuing 60-year commitment to the fire service is something that even folks have never met him. I never met the man once in my life, but I know that that as the president of the International Society of Fire Service Instructors, he shaped what we are currently enjoying today. And so from all of us here at the training office, Chief Jack, thank you very much for your service, and Godspeed. All right, folks, next item of business under the board member updates, we've got live fire attack research and training. You remember last month we had Chief Klein come on and he talked about the burn things that we're going to be doing. The burn things, good Lord, what is with me? We're talking about the research and training that they're doing. They got a grant. If you remember, ISFSI is partnering with the National Institute of Standards and Technology, as well as the South Carolina Fire Academy, for research and creation of a training module that will improve firefighter safety. They got this grant as within the Fire Prevention and Safety Grant category. The grants programs from the FEMA will provide funding to conduct 8 live fire burns, and that's going to be January 22nd through the 30th with NIST gathering data at each one. Folks, here's the opportunity for all of you to get involved. Go over to our webpage. Stop by and see us there at ISFSI.org. On our webpage, there's a link. You can sign up. You can be part of this. And I don't have the funding information in front of me. I believe that your funding is going to be on your own travel and everything is on your own. But here's an opportunity for you to actually take part in some of this training and research that's going on and be part of what I consider to be one of the most important pieces of research that's continuing to come out of NIST and the wonderful work that they're doing there. And really what I like about this, what's an opportunity for all of us here at ISFSI, is you get to be involved with that. And we're going to take this information and we're going to actually turn it directly into we. Listen to me, like I'm part of it. Here I'm sitting in my house, and I'm not doing anything. But the point being is we're going to take this information and turn it into a usable training module for you to share with your firefighters. To be able to be part of that is just absolutely outstanding. So, folks, if you're able to, please get over to our website, ISFSI.org, and take a look at that and see if that might be something that you're going to be able to participate in. So that would be kind of cool. And the last thing, folks, I just want to remind you, and I honestly forgot about this myself, every day, I think, as an instructor, as a training officer, as a program manager, whatever we do, the internet is one of those things. We've talked about this before. It's one of those places where we go to, we get a lot of information. There's a lot of stuff out there. We have to try to take what we find out there, frame it, if you will, put it into context, and deliver it to our folks. And there's, it's just a constant barrage of information which is available out there. And sometimes we forget to, I try to have a pretty good routine as far as where I go on the internet every day looking for stuff and seeing what's out there. I subscribe to several RSS. I think we talked about those really simple subscriptions. So I get information sent directly to me. And as an instructor, training officer, program manager, that is vital to have that information pumped directly to your desktop. Got that. Folks, the other thing that's out there is social media. We forget about that. Right now, we are just inundated with stories via the fire service website of firefighters, police officers, folks that are involved with public safety doing exceptionally dumb things on social media. And unfortunately, that's all we hear about. So it kind of pushes some of us away from social media. We're thinking, well, why do I want to get involved in that? What's out there? Folks, ISFSI has we have a page on Facebook. I am a Facebooker myself. I'm more of a creeper than I actually engage in a lot of stuff. But there's so many fire service pages out there. There's so many people that are active and passionate about our profession. And remember, profession having nothing to do with your paycheck, all about the job you do. Folks, they're out there. They're sharing information every day. They're available. I understand if you have some reservations about Facebook or other social medias, media outlets, but I'm just going to encourage you, take a look at it. It doesn't cost you anything. It's available free of charge. There's great information out there. Again, you as a training officer, as a program manager, as the instructor, have to frame that information for your folks, but it's out there, and it's great stuff, and I think we have to take a look at that. So please stop by Facebook if you have an opportunity. If you are a Facebooker, stop by. ISFSI's got a presence on there, and they're really doing some good stuff, and there's a lot of information that gets pumped out by Facebook. Honestly, just because it's very easy to do it. I'm not a web guy. I'm not a computer guy, per se, but I know that it's a lot easier to update Facebook than it is websites, and sometimes the information gets put out by Facebook a little bit quicker than it does other places. So, but make sure you get an opportunity and take a look at that. And I think, again, it's what you put into it, what you're going to get out of it, I think, is one of those things. As long as we're behaving in the way that we would behave if someone was watching, when we're on the internet, we're probably going to be okay. So I just wanted to pass that along to you folks. Okay, let's, I sounded like I was just lecturing there. I apologize. I don't need to lecture people. That's all right. Just want to share some information. Folks, let's talk about some items in the news. Firefighter fatality report released on the Wisconsin Theater Fire line of duty death. And I actually took a look at this. I have downloaded the report. I have not made it entirely through it. Without saying, and I'm going to go through some of this, and I prepared some things I want to just review with you real quick. You read these things, and they really try to do a good job of washing the information off so they're not, you know, Department A showed up and did really bad stuff and somebody got killed. They try not to do that. They're saying, listen, these are the facts, and the facts of these is what happened. And if something bad happened, the fire department didn't do something there, but for the grace of God, so you or I, it can happen to any one of us. So these are opportunities that we have to take to look at the research that's been done, take a good look at it, and see if we can apply the lessons learned. So let's just take a quick look at this real quick. I want to go through it. National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, NIOSH, recently released a report on the death of a volunteer firefighter following the collapse of a bowstring roof at a theater fire in Wisconsin earlier this year. Two other firefighters were also injured in the fire at the historic Abbey Theater in Abbotsford, Wisconsin. Now, this happened on March the 4th, 2012. A 34-year-old male volunteer lieutenant lost his life at a theater fire after the roof collapsed, trapping him inside the theater. At approximately 12:15 hours, an on-duty patrol officer, also chief of the victim's fire department, and this is kind of an area in Wisconsin where, the lines are a bit blurry. There's a lot of volunteer departments. Part-time departments, paid-on-call combination departments, and you'll find that there's a lot of folks, and in this case, I believe that the young firefighter that lost his life was also actively involved in law enforcement as his primary job. But a patrol officer, an on-duty patrol officer, also the chief of the victim's fire department, radio dispatch for a structure fire. The first two fire departments arrived on the scene, set operations on the A side of the building, and directed the incoming mutual aid departments, including the victim's department, to the rear of the structure. No fire was visible from the rear. Both departments attack the theater fire from opposite sides, the A side and the C side of the structure, establishing their own incident commander, officer in charge, fire ground operations, and accountability systems. The first-year fire department initially fought the fire defensively from the A side, while the victim and two additional firefighters, we'll call them Firefighter 1 and 2, entered through the C side, advancing a hose line until they met the A side firefighters near the theater's lobby, the area of fire origin. The first two fire department eventually placed the elevated master stream at operation, directing it into the lobby and then onto the roof while firefighters were operating inside. Roof conditions deteriorated until the roof collapsed into the structure, trapping the victim, Firefighter 1 and Firefighter 2. Firefighters 1 and 2 recall speaking to the victim immediately following the collapse, but nothing was heard from the victim following the activation of a personal alert safety system device. All three were eventually located, removed from the structure, and transported to a local hospital, but the victim had already succumbed to his injuries. Folks, I just read you just a very, very brief synopsis of that incident, and as you read it, you, like I, wish to make a judgment or two about some of the tactics, some of the things that happened there. That's fine. We're people. We're human. We don't want to point. I'm not going to point the finger at these departments and say you did bad things, but I am going to look at this item, this incident critically, and make sure that this becomes something that my department, my entire fire department, is aware of. This happened, and I'm not familiar with where Abbotsford is, but I'm literally 15 minutes from the Wisconsin border. If you're at my house, you can smell the cheese. We're literally that close, so. Not very far, not in another big city, not in another country, not anywhere else. Another fire department similarly situated to mine, this happened. It becomes my responsibility to make sure that my folks know that this happened and that they do everything they can and everything I can to make sure this does not ever happen to our department. And again, folks, it's one of those things. I'm sorry, my little dog Chico is really being a pain in my butt. She wants to be part of the show, so I apologize for that. So, folks, the item, again, I'm going to go through and we'll talk about some very critical things that happened at this fire, but among those things that were identified by NIOSH, and again, you're going to look at this and go, well, Al, geez, we've seen the same things over and over again. Why are we not getting it? And folks, I don't have the answer to that. And boy, I did. I wish I did have the answer to that. That would be outstanding. But we seem to make the same mistakes. And one of the reasons I think we make the same mistakes, and this is just Al talking, just between us, you know, us folks here, I think we forget. I think we forget about things. We don't look at this because when I first read that synopsis, I'm like, well, they're being critical of this department. Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what my actions were doing, but they're doing it for a purpose, and I think for a very noble purpose, to make sure we understand what happened, not to point the finger and say you did wrong, but to look at it and to critically determine what happens and then lay it all on the table for us. And us, when I say us, I mean firefighters, fire officers, instructors, program managers, training officers, whatever we are, however we work, that we make sure we understand this. Let's take a look at some of those things. The report listed several contributing factors to the line of duty death. Initial arriving units, not establishing, performing, or implementing an incident management system, an overall incident commander, and an incident action plan, as well as a 360-degree situational size-up. Boy, if you want to look at, and again, I apologize, I don't know every state, but if you look at Fire Officer 1 Basic Incident Management, which, by the way, we are all required to teach. Right? We're required, and again, I always talk about requirements. I'm a big fan of the NFPA. I'm a big fan of standards because they're best practices. It talks right in Firefighter 1. Listen, you got to teach your folks the incident management system. Yeah, they're entry-level firefighters. They're not the chief of the department, but they are responsible to operate within a system. We have to make sure they understand it, and they know, more importantly, how to start that system and how to start it off right with some basic stuff, and in this case, an incident action plan. Are we offensive or are we defensive? Folks, say what you want about Blue Card or some of those things that are out there, but they're making, and whatever you adopt, I don't really care. I'm not a salesman. Whatever you adopt, listen, we have to establish early on, are we offensive or are we defensive? What are we doing? Did we get a look at this entire building? And in this case, it's a theater, so I can only assume it's a pretty decent-sized building. Maybe it's going to be difficult to get to the rear, but we've got to make it a priority to get somebody back there, take a look at the rear of this building and see what's going on, make sure we have a clear understanding of this fire so we operate appropriately. have an incident commander. And I know there's critics out there that say, listen, we're spending so much time handing out vests and putting people in charge for you not putting the fire out. I'm not talking about that. I am simply talking about establishing one person that's going to take care of these things and say, I will be responsible. Now, again, I'll go to Eileen on Blue Card a little bit because I'm somewhat familiar with it. But just because you're the incident commander doesn't mean you have to stand still. I know there's people that subscribe to that. They have to be in a car. They have to do this. Well, I get really nervous when there's a lot of have to and can't and things of that nature. It's that always never thing. I'm not a big fan of always never. I think it leads us down the wrong path. But we have to make sure somebody's in charge and these things get done because obviously the outcome could be pretty bad. Risk management principles not effectively used. Fireground and suppression activities not coordinated. Boy, that's kind of a big deal. And that goes back to, I think, everything we were just talking about. Fireground communications between departments were not established. Incident safety officer role ineffective. And remember, if you're going from just pure incident management, the incident commander, the original incident commander, is responsible for a lot of things. And it's establishing command, setting up the risk management plan, deciding how you're going to attack this fire, and also serving as a safety officer so someone can get that role filled. So the incident commander has a lot of responsibility. But in this case, it talks about the incident safety officer being ineffective. So there may have been one. And again, I apologize, I haven't finished the entire report, so we're not really certain about that. Rapid intervention crew procedures not followed and or implemented. Bowstring ratio number one. This is number 7 on the list. I wish it would have been number 1. Bowstring roof truss construction not recognized. Folks, we just had December's a horrible month in fire service, and I want to say it was November, and the Yingling, the anniversary of the Yingling, the Chevrolet fire that happened in the someplace in Kansas, and again, I don't have the information in front of me. Boy, the bowstring truss, as much as we've talked about it, it still, on occasion, sneaks up and gets us, and in this case, that's what happened, and it's not new, but here we are again, and again, let's be critical about the fire. Not about the people that were there. They did certainly the best job that they could. Fire burn undetected within the roof void space for an unknown period of time. Uncoordinated master stream operations. That's a big one. We run into that one on occasion. When we start putting up the master streams, well, I'll tell you what, that is a very dangerous time when we talk about it. And what a great tool it is. We're so fortunate in the fire service that we have some of these tools where we can elevate a device to deliver 500 to 1,000 gallons, and in some cases more, per minute. That is a powerful tool, and we're able to do some really cool things with it. Boy, but when we're doing that, we have to make sure that is a very coordinated and skillfully done process, because if not, we're certainly going to hurt somebody, and we don't want to see that happen. And then location of the victim following roof class is immediately not known. And I think that is going to go back to all the stuff we talked about, incident management and accountability and things like that. Now, to be a little bit more critical and go through this, it also made several key recommendations. And I think when you look at these reports, you're going to see the recommendations more often than not are somewhat similar based on the things that happen. Let's go with number 1. Fire department should ensure that an effective incident management system is established with a designated incident commander not involved with fire suppression activities. Now, again, I just mentioned the Blue Card thing, and again, I'm not a salesman for them, and I don't wish to do that, but they talk about a fast attacking incident commander, and with most fire companies today, I mean, there's companies out there, and again, I know there's some exceptions that are running with one, but we're talking about 2-person companies, 3-person companies on a good day. In my organization, and we're very, very fortunate that we've got good staffing. It's not great, but it's good, and I'm very fortunate. We can't just tie somebody up and say, okay, you go stand over there and don't do anything. We have to have that fast backing into the commander. There's somebody that's involved in the fire, but at least we've got somebody that says, listen, I'm going to assume this responsibility until I can pass this along to somebody who's going to be in a more established location and have the resources necessary. But at least I'm assuming that incident command role, and I'm saying, listen, this is what we're going to do. And the companies that are coming in, it's coordinated. I think that's really all that it speaks to. We get down to the bottom of it. Fire department should ensure that a complete situational science is conducted on all structure fires. And again, sometimes I understand that's very difficult to do, but we've got to get to the rear of these buildings. We've got to take a look and see what's going on. So often, it's so critical. When we start talking, now this is obviously a commercial fire. When you start talking about residential structure fires and the necessity to get to the rear and get a look at the back of this building, find out what's going on, so often that is how people go in and out of their houses. It's through the back door, and that's kind of their normal means of travel. I can't tell you the amount of reports that I've read where, you know, a single firefighter runs around the back of the building, take a look, pops her head in the back door, and there's the occupant, you know, conscious or unconscious, you know, putzed around, or maybe that's where they were overcome by the products of combustion. And there they are. We never would have found them before. So getting to the rear is very, very important. But effective situational awareness size up on all of our buildings. Fire departments should use risk management principles in all structure fires. Now, when you talk about, and I'll go back to NFPA 1500 because I'm such a fan of it. And it talks about in NFPA 1500 that all firefighters, everybody from the fire chief to the newest recruit, needs to be trained in a yearly and ongoing basis on the fire department's risk management system. And you're thinking, boy, you know, hey, smart guy, what are you talking about here? What incident risk management, what are you talking about? And folks, here's the cool part about it, and again, not selling any particular type of thing, it just comes back to me, but if you look at the Chief Bernasini model, and I know as soon as I say his name, some people cheer, other people cringe, but set that aside for a second, if you simply look at it from the 3 points you put, and again, I'm going to oversimplify it, but we'll risk our lives to save our lives, we'll risk a little to save a little, we'll risk nothing to save what's already lost. It's a simple plan, but if our folks don't know what that plan is, we can't expect them to operate inside of that plan, and that's when bad things are going to happen. So do we know what that plan is? Have we implemented one? Do we have one? And you can make that as complicated as you want to. Believe me, I've seen some risk management plans that are volumes. It's amazing how complicated we can make them. We risk our lives to save lives. We risk a little to save a little. We risk nothing to save that which is already lost. And unfortunately, that includes people and property, and it's a difficult call because that's not why we signed up, is to watch stuff burn down or to see people die. But we have to really try to risk manage these things and look at and see what we're doing. And again, I'll just move on because I don't want to get into a debate about what we're doing, but I think as instructors, as training officers, as program managers, we have to make sure that our folks understand what risk is and understand how much we're willing to take. Fire departments should work together to develop mutual aid, standard operating procedures for fire ground operations to support interagency operability and accountability, and train on those procedures. Let's take that whole first part of that thing. We'll take the very first. The fire departments should get together and they should train. Take all that stuff in the middle out, interoperability and all the other stuff, and it just makes your head, because you're thinking, how am I going to get my neighbors to get on the same? Sometimes we can't even agree on what color fire truck should be. I make fun of my neighbors to the north, Fox Lake, they have green. Everybody knows they're not right. Folks, here's the thing. Whatever your neighbors do, whether you get along with them or not, and I know that some places we have those, there's friction between, when Mrs. Smith or Mrs. McGillicuddy or Mrs. Sanchez or whoever it is calls 911, the person on the other end asks two questions. Where are you at and what's wrong? And we have to show up and be prepared to make a difference and to not spend our time working against each other. And how does that happen? How do you make that happen? Is it high-level meetings where people sit down and they draw up big plans? Is it where all the chiefs get together and they go to lunch every month? And no. Well, maybe some of that is involved in it. But the bigger part of it, folks, is we get together as firefighters, as company officers, and we train and we work together. And the best way that I can ever imagine to build interoperability, besides the hardware that goes into that, and radios and blah, blah, blah. What is the best interoperability that's out there? Looking across at another fire company and knowing the names of everybody on that company and being able to call them by their first name. Hey, Kevin. Hey, John. Hey, Frank. How you doing? Nice to see you. Molly, good to see you. Thanks for being around. Thanks for the help you provided. Thanks for showing up. Sorry we didn't have any work for you. You know, maybe it's nothing that the fire went out, the incident was resolved quickly. Thanks for coming by. That is the single best way I know. And listen, maybe there's a better way. I'm not the smartest guy in the world. What the hell do I know? I'm just telling you, there's the single best way I know to make these things happen, to make this point number four here on this list of recommendations is to get together and to train. If you respond together, you have an obligation to train together. And it's easy for me to say, sitting here in my safe little office, not have to answer to everybody and going through the politics. And I know that we are to get involved in our fire departments. I know as training officers and program managers, sometimes we have a hard time overcome that. But we have to make it a priority. We've got to get together with our neighbors and we've got to train. Let's see. I've got a couple more points here. Fire department should ensure that the incident safety officer position, independent from the incident commander. Remember I said that the incident commander is the safety officer until at which point they can appoint one. Here's what we're talking about. Is appointed and effectively utilized at every structure fire, meeting the requirements of NFPA 1521, which is a standard for the fire department safety officer. Listen, fire department 1521 basically lays it out. If you don't have the safety officer program in your state, your fire academy, you're looking for what does the safety officer do, there you go. It's right in black and white for you. 1521 is a brilliant document. Go take a look at it. But here's the thing. If you caught the wording in that, I found it interesting. It says, and I'm probably going to go back to it just for a second, appointed and effectively utilized. Listen, it's one thing to say, hey, John, hey, Sue, you're going to be the training officer. You're going to be the incident safety officer for this incident, and then completely disregarding anything they tell you. Or giving that job to somebody that doesn't know, you know, a junior firefighter that doesn't know a lot about it, or a newer firefighter that doesn't really understand what they're looking at, doesn't have the experience and the training and the practice. What did I just say there? Experience, training. Well, everything's a training issue, isn't it? When you come right down to it, everything is a training issue. But we make sure we give that job to the person that's competent to do it. If you're looking for competencies, look no further than 1521. But they're competent, and we put faith in the things that they say. And that's a big responsibility, being the safety officer. We always talk about the safety officer can stop operations. There's a reason for that. And if the safety officer says we need to stop what we're doing, the incident commander has to have faith in their abilities and say, okay, we're going to stop, we're going to do something, we're going to regroup, we're going to do whatever we need to do, and approach this incident, approach this problem from a different way. And it's not just fires, folks. The incident safety officer is a key part of any successful operation, whether it's fires, extrication, any of the things that we do out in the field, folks. It's always great to have another set of eyes. All right. And I'm going to move on, and then we talk about the incident safety officer. We got that. It's important to have. Folks, we are just about halfway into the show. I'm going to take just a quick break for just a second here, and we'll be right back.
We're coming right back after these messages. We're coming right back after these messages.
When you're not listening to Fire Engineering Talk Radio, get online to fireengineering.com and check out the Fire Engineering Network. Get the best in training, news, video, and community in the fire service today. The best source for training and information on the World Wide Web, fireengineering.com. Now back to Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Folks, welcome back to the training office. My name is Al Schlick. I am your host here this evening, about halfway through the show, and I just realized, I told you, I kind of take an idea. I don't script it again. I just kind of lay it out, and I'm halfway through the show, and I haven't even gotten to the thing we're going to talk about, so I'm going to blast through this last item really quickly, but I don't want to do any disrespect, because this is one that kind of hits home. It's close to home anyways. This is from KMOV, which is an affiliate out of the St. Louis area, from Bartlesville, Illinois. And I apologize. I don't know. I know it's south, and it's not too far. It's about 45 miles east of St. Louis. Authorities say that a firefighter is dead after being struck by a fire truck while working to control a house fire in Bartlesville, Illinois on Sunday. Now, this is going back, I want to say, to the beginning of this month. I forget the exact date. I don't have it written down. The authorities with the Santa Fe Fire Protection District announced that Timothy Jansen, 45, died while working at the scene of a fire in the 9700 block of River Road. Officials say the fire came out as a timber fire about 7:30 p.m. on Sunday, but when crews arrived in the scene, they discovered the fire had spread to a nearby home. Santa Fe Fire Protection District Chief Adam Amau, M-A-U-E, sorry, Chief, if I messed that up, said Jansen was pulling hoses off the fire truck when he slipped and the truck struck him. So the truck's driver didn't know if Jansen had fallen, but thought it was okay to move the vehicle. Jansen was rushed to the hospital in Breeze, where he was later pronounced dead. He was a volunteer firefighter for about 15 years and was survived by his wife and two young daughters. And if I remember the story correctly, the town's a very small town. He was he owned a restaurant in town, very active in the fire department. When we talk about lessons learned and the things that happen, And can you possibly for one second imagine being the driver of that fire apparatus and that is responsible for this, and how horrifying that must be, and how horrible for this fire department and for firefighter Jansen's family as well? And I just want to, again, We bring it up and we talk about it, and we're critical of the event, not of the people. And we say, how do I stop this happening? Do my firefighters have to go to the rear of the vehicle to lead out? Do we lead off from the side? Do we have Maddie Dales or crossways or whatever you might have in your case? And if we're doing that, how do we know when that is safe? And what processes or plans do we have in place to make sure that this does not happen in our organization? Folks, as I've said before, when we look at these things, whether it's the theater fire, the Illinois firefighter, we take this information and we put together training that meets three requirements. It's realistic for our department, it's relevant to our department, and again, something that's reproducible so we can do it over again and make sure that it does not happen to us, not only now while it's fresh in our mind, but certainly later on. Folks, the whole point of this evening's show is I wanted to spend just a little bit of time talking to us about the year we've had and the year that we've got coming ahead of us. 2012 has been, to least say, an interesting year. The budget, as I suspect all of us, have been squeezed. Our economy is still struggling to get back to where it needs to be. And regardless of our politics and what we might think, we've had an election. Things are going to start moving forward now. Hopefully, we're going to move forward in a positive way and work together to solve the problems that we need. But how does this affect us as training officers and instructors and training program managers? And it could have a pretty significant impact as far as the dollars that are available to us, the time, the people. And when you look at when I say the people available to us, folks are working two and three jobs sometimes, and it's hard to get my, and I apologize, I don't stay up with it as much as I should, but I know that the National Volunteer Fire Council is talking about recruitment and retention being the number one problem that they're having out there, and getting folks to come to the firehouse is step number one, but then getting the training done and the repetition and the necessary reps to build the skills to make sure that when they get out on the road and they're doing the job, that they're safe and that it's safe and they're doing a good job for the customer. And that becomes difficult, especially when you're in an environment where, listen, I'm working two jobs, but I've got a family, I've got obligations of, church and whatever the case might be. It's hard for us to do that. And each one of us as training officers, as training program managers, as instructors, we know that that's one of those things we have to address. And in the career service, folks, believe me, it's no better. And we're looking at short staffing and how do you get those, how do you make those opportunities? Well, we're running back-to-back calls. I don't know what it is about my organization and the organizations in my area, and I suspect the rest of the fire service is like that. We can't seem to have one call. We seem to have two or three at a time. It's amazing. We're doing some training. We brought the neighbors up. We train every quarter with our neighbors. And this particular it was the first part of this of December, we had the neighbors up, Lake Zurich, and what we did is we built a little maze. We've got one of those Sealand cargo containers. We built a maze in it. And one of the drills we do every year, and I just love this drill. The guys and girls probably hate me for it, but we bring the companies together. I bring an engine company from Lake Zurich, an engine company from O'Connor. We get together. What I do is I take the company officers. They go together. The engineers go together and the backstep folks go together. And they go through the maze together. And, again, remember the whole thing I talked about, that company and being able to look across the company and know everybody by the name? Boy, that's the best way to do it. You ever go through an SCBA maze, an obstacle maze, not something crazy, but go through it with somebody else, you get intimately knowledge of each other because you're talking, you're communicating, you're working in a small space, and communication becomes important. And being able to say, hey, Dan, hey, Beth, could you help me here? Whatever the case might be, it builds some intimacy, and these folks certainly know each other. But we're up there. The whole point of the story, I'm sorry, is that we were up there doing this training. We just got done with an evolution. We're going to send the Lake Zurich engine was just packing up to go, and all of a sudden they had to catch a run. And the company officer looks at me and says, well, Chief, I'm not really sure we're going to be able to make it. And I said, well, that's okay. We'll see what happens. The dispatcher no longer got the tone set out and the information passed along when the tone's off again. I'm like, oh, are they retoning? Was there a mistake? No, it was a second call. And when she got done with that one, there was a third call. It was amazing. And I looked at the company officer and said, just another day. It's just how it is these days. We're really being taxed heavily. Especially if you're providing EMS service, and again, not getting on a soapbox, but it's becoming even more. And again, the folks that are on, Simply Fire Service, listen to me, that are running fire service only, they're busy too. Everybody's busy. We're really, really being taxed by the state of things today. So I understand we have those conferences, those things. So what's the point of all this? Why am I yammering out about this forever? Here's my point. When we sit down, and I hopefully you've already started. I know I've already started doing it for myself. I actually started probably last month. I kind of sent out a survey. Just get an idea for what the folks were looking for, which, of course, didn't help any because I got mixed results. But the point being is I asked, what do we need? What are we doing good? What are we not doing so good? What are you comfortable with? What are you not comfortable with? Four simple questions. And I was able to get a lot of information as we started building. But I think when we look at our calendars, when you go to put your calendar together for next year, for 2013, you start off right off the bat, I think, with those things that are absolutely positive that you have to do. And whether that's regulatory, whether it's your state that says, listen, you got to do this. And suddenly my computer just started talking to me. I apologize for that. But here's the point. I'm talking about bloodborne pathogens and hazmat, some of the stuff that's just mandated that, you know, the feds have said, listen, you got to do this. And I know there's a lot of folks out there that are not big fans of the NFPA, and they're not big fans of the state's labor organization. You know, I've got the Illinois Department of Labor, you know, that says, listen, it's all about safe working environments, things of that nature. I know folks aren't big fans of that because some of the stuff you go, oh, my God, I got to do this again. Folks, it is what it is. We can do one of two things. We can accept it, build it into the training program, and get past it, or we can argue about it, we can be upset about it, we can stomp our feet, and then go the whole time praying that something never happens because we're going to have a hard time when it comes time to stand tall before the man and explain, why didn't we do this? So a long time ago, I said, you know, it is what it is. We're going to make the best of it. We do it. So every year, I plug in the mandated stuff, I call it. And every state is a little bit different. Certainly looking at your state labor organization is a great place to start as far as mandated stuff goes. And if you don't have one, you know, again, I don't want to get into the OSHA plan states and all that other stuff, but if you're curious, go to OSHA, take a look. There's some great stuff there. It, you know, kind of gives you some good direction. The NFPA also gives us great direction. NFPA 1500, one of my favorites, and I said that once and I'll say it again. We should probably rename this the Al Schlick NFPA 1500 show because it's all I talk about. And I love that standard because it's a good place to start. But we look at all those things. So then what comes next? Okay, you build that in and you're thinking to yourself, oh, I've got limited amount of training time. How can I waste it with this? And folks, I think we got to get past that. We can't look at it as a waste of time. We just look at it, it's one of those things we got to do. We got to pay taxes. I don't want to do that, but, you know, every year, I don't want to pay my mortgage. But every month they do. I pay the mortgage. It's one of those things we simply have to do. So we do it. We get past it. Then we got to go to those things that our firefighters absolutely positively need to know. Mandates first. Then what do we need to know? And what is it that we need to know? And here's the answer. I'm just going to cop out completely. The answer is I don't have a first clue what your firefighters need. Because I don't know them. I know my firefighters. And I know the fire service. I've been around long enough. Okay, I understand what we do. But every one of us does something a little bit different. And every one of us has little issues. And again, I think I've mentioned this before. I don't spend a ton of time doing high-rise stuff. I think we've done some awareness because a couple of our neighbors have some mid-rises, we call them, you know, 6-8 stories, whatever the case might be. I don't have high-rises. I don't do that. I don't spend time on it. I'll tell you what I don't have a lot of fire hydrants either. So we spend a lot of time working on rural water supply, the ability to move water, to shuttle water, and to draft. I know there's fire folks out there that have been in the fire service longer than I have and been driving fire trucks the whole time, have never touched the primer. Because they don't have to. They got those little red things that stick out of the ground all the place. We don't have a lot of that. I've got about 30% of my district's got hydrants. The rest of us. So we spend time. That's one of those skills that my firefighters need to know. Obviously, I think it goes without saying, and I think I glossed over this, and I apologize, but I think right away it goes with SCBA. Every one of us, if we're going to send our firefighters into an IDLH atmosphere, i.e. the products of combustion, that one of the things they absolutely positively need to know is the use of the SCBA, the use of personal protective equipment. I almost consider that to be one of those mandatory things. And if you look at NFPA 1500, if you look at the OSHA standards when it comes to personal protective equipment and respiratory, 1910-134, I think, that's 1920. Anyways, 134, the respiratory protection standard says, listen, you got to make sure if your folks are using respiratory protection that they know how to use it. And it's got to be continuous ongoing training. We have to do this. So need to know. Mandates, need to know. What is it that your firefighters really need to know? And as an example, you know, here I'll use another example. My firefighter is, we provide water rescue services. When I say water rescue, it's kind of all encompassing. I've got a river, I've got a couple of small lakes, and then I've got just a boatload of retention ponds. Some of them are puddles, effectively. Others are huge. Not every one of my folks is trained in water rescue, i.e. either divers or anything of that nature. We're starting a swift water thing is going on in our Mavis division. We participate in Mavis here, and our Mavis division and at the county level, we've got Lake and McHenry County, Mavis division 4 and 5, and we're doing some swift water stuff. All of my folks are not trained to that level, but what we do provide them with is some awareness level, basic operations, keep yourself out of trouble, go home safe at the end of your shift after a water event. I mean, that's really what we're providing for. I think it's something they need to know, but again, I'm not going to spend a ton of time in it because I've got this. I think this is going to be a gray area. Now we're going to move into, I've got my mandates, I've got the stuff that my firefighters absolutely positively have to know, and then I've got the things that I think it's really, really good for them to know. And where do we find that information? Again, I think you have to go back and look at your organization, look at the type, and there's a thing, and I'm going to mess it up here. I forget it's coming up. It's one of those training things that's available coming up here, and it's all about fighting fires with information. And again, I think they're talking about some geospatial stuff. But the point is, we really need to know what we did last year. Right about now, we should be taking a very critical look at the incidents we responded to in 2012. And I understand 2012 is not over, but taking a critical look at those incidents and saying, what kind of training opportunities did they present? What kind of opportunities did I see? You know, based on what we did, this would really be good stuff for us to know. And I think you're going to find a lot of information. Look at what you're doing. I know there's a lot of popular stuff on the internet, and these training things come in vogue, and there's things that come in and out. I mean, I think about after 9/11, and we were just inundated with weapons of mass destruction training, and still kind of waiting for that. You know, and you get, well, I'm not waiting for it. I don't want anything bad to happen. But the point is, there was a lot of hours dedicated to something that I think is probably a nice to know, and maybe even a good to know if you're in a more of one of our urban centers. I think that's a good thing to know about, but really not something that we're going to do. So we look at our mandates. We look at our things that our firefighters absolutely need to know. We try to identify the things that are good to know based on our history, based on the information we know about our department. And then there's those things that are just nice to know. It's just fun stuff to do that it's okay to do. We did a thing. And I haven't done it this year, but I'll take a little bit of time here at the end of the year, and we'll do some history. I'll put together a Jeopardy game, and we'll play a little stuff, and we'll talk about the history of our organization. Where did we come from? Who was the chief in 1900? It has very little to do with putting out a fire in my district or making sure my firefighters were safe, but it's one of those things that we talk about, duty, pride, tradition, and we try to instill, and I think it's one of those things that's really just, it's nice to know stuff. So we kind of address it that way. Boy, listen to me. I'm rambling on. I hope I have provided some positive ideas for you as you're sitting thinking about 2013 and the challenges that are going to come out there, and what do I address and how do I address those things. Again, every one of us is so different, but we're so connected by this service and the service we provide. It's really an interesting thing, and I was talking to one of the training officers, one of my peers the other day about what's going on in their department. And we have a lot of the same issues. We have a lot of the same problems. We just address them and we approach them a little bit differently. And that's a fun thing about this. You're so creative. And us as instructors and as training officers and program managers, we have to be constantly challenging ourselves, challenging our folks, and coming up with new and exciting ways. That whole thing I talked about, you know, when you're laying out your training program, as far as the mandated stuff, you know, most of the time you give that to your firefighters, want to pull their hair out. How do you keep them excited about bloodborne pathogens? And the answer to me might be you're never going to keep them safe. You're never going to keep them excited about it, but you're going to make it one of those things that after it's over, then, yeah, that wasn't bad. It was okay. You don't want it to be, oh, my God, we have to do this again, and they're going to be looking at the same PowerPoint or the same video or the same lecture, and it just gets old. We have to be connected. We have to be together if we're going to make these things happen. So, folks, again, 2013, I'm looking forward to it. We've got some exciting stuff coming up here at the International Society of Fire Service Instructors. I really encourage you to have a safe holiday and whatever one you celebrate. Keep your folks safe. Keep focused on this and look forward to really just another outstanding year here at the ISFSI. And folks, as we wrap up this evening, just a couple of items. I do the Leaders Read Book of the Month, and I actually think I put this on here once before, but I'm back at it again because I didn't finish the book, and I'm ashamed of myself, but I'm reading a book called Chaos, Making of a New Science, and Chaos is one of those things. This is a book that I think was recommended to me by our friend Chris Brennan over at Fire Service Warrior. If we understand chaos, it's actually the interesting thing about it is our job as firefighters, when we look at the, and we talk about structure fires and those types of things, those events being dynamic, it's just amazing the things that can happen. And so Chaos just kind of caught my eye, and Chris recommended the book, so I'm reading it. But if you get an opportunity, it's Chaos, Making of a New Science, by James Gleick, G-L-E-I-C-K. Interesting book. And if you're looking for something new, boy, folks, it's really a new thing. And I'm horrible at math, I'll tell you right up front. So it's a very science-heavy book, and it talks about math. But it also talks a little bit about I'm doing some of the math stuff that's out there, and that made me happy because I hate math. I'm not very good at it. Folks, some training opportunities that are coming your way that I want to make you very aware of, December 19th, and it's going to be at 3 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, so figure that out for your time zone. Fighting Fires and Information, Improving Fire Rescue Services, Standard of Cover, and Firefighter Safety through Interoperability, and that's available at fireengineering.com. Stop by Fire Engineering's website, take a look at this. This is one of those really interesting things where I believed this for a long time. I don't know how I picked this up, again, not being a computer guy, but there's an old saying out there that says knowledge is power, and I believe that. Remember I just a minute ago talked about looking back at your runs you went on in 2012 and knowing those runs and knowing what your organization went through. That doesn't mean it's exactly what they're going to do in the next year, but it gives you a pretty good idea. And you're not surprised by too many things that happen in the new year because you've studied the old year, you studied what you've done, you know what you did good, you know what you need to do better. It's all part of knowledge is power. So stop by and take a look at that. You might be interested at fireengineering.com. Don't forget, when you're at fireengineering.com, stop by and see our friend Forrest Reeder. He's got the fire training drills that he puts out every month. Some great stuff that he's out there. Again, if you're looking for a quick drill, go to the Fire Engineering website, fireengineering.com. And go down to Forrest's area there, and he's got some great stuff for you. It's just kind of one of those last-minute things you're looking for. And you know what? It's actually one of those things that, listen, I'm looking for something to do for drill next week. You can take what he started with, expand upon it. It's wonderful stuff. He's putting out some great stuff for us. The plugs, my favorite part of the show, just for an opportunity to brag about some of our friends and some of the things that are going out there. Obviously, stop by the International Society of Fire Service Instructors website at isfsi.org. Take a look at what's going on. Don't forget about us on Facebook. We're always out there looking for, trying to put new stuff up. Folks, if you remember last show, we talked to the folks from Fire Training Toolbox. That's firetrainingtoolbox.com. They're putting out some great stuff. Again, go over, take a look, see what they've done, build on it, expand on it. Use it for your department. Make sure it's appropriate for your department. Remember we talked about that, realistic, relevant, reproducible. Go look. They're doing some great stuff, and I think you're going to really enjoy it. So stop by our friends and see at firetrainingtoolbox.com. Don't forget Fire Engineering Magazine, as I said. Stop over and see our friend Chris Brennan at fireservicewarrior.com, and him and Brian that are doing some, again, next-level cutting-edge stuff I think is really important. And then don't forget about our friends Forrest at thetrainingofficer.com. Folks, it has been an absolute pleasure to spend 2012 with you, to spend this evening with you. I certainly hope that the time we spend together is valuable to you and that you get things out of it. That is entirely my purpose of doing this. It's just an opportunity to share. Believe me, it's not just to hear myself talk, although you would think that's really what it's about, but I really am passionate about fire service training and about the fire service in general, and I think it's one of those things that we have to know there's other people out there like us. We have shared ideas, we have shared passion, shared knowledge, and we make the very best out of this we can. So please, thank you so much for spending time with us and making 2012 as successful as it was. Folks, I'm excited about 2013. It's going to be a great year. I'm absolutely sure of it. But keep your eye on the ISFSI, and we're going to be doing some exciting things. So on behalf of Chief Doug Klein, the current president of the International Society of Fire Service Instructors, Chief Pegram, my boss, immediate boss, the one that keeps me in line, and certainly Chief Halton, Chief Bobby Halton from FireEngineering.com that really makes all of this possible. We're so very happy for that, and all the good folks at Fire Engineering. Folks, this is the training office. We're in service. You be safe.
The Voice is produced by the International Society of Fire Service Instructors in cooperation with Fire Engineering Magazine. For more information on the Instructor Society, go to www.isfsi.org.